Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Extreme heat and a porous worker. Some call it the inequality of climate change. Walmart loses a case where a worker with Down syndrome gets fired. And today on the show, the latest from the Ohio Federation of Teachers and what LESSET is all about. Welcome to the Tuesday, July 20th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. And we have two guests on the show today. One of them, Melissa Cropper, longtime contributor and a sponsor of America's Workforce. We're talking about the Ohio Federation of Teachers. She is president of that union. And she's going to talk about the organizing campaign at Worthington Libraries. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Just to refresh you, approximately 120 librarians and library workers at Worthington Libraries in Central Ohio are well on their way to forming their union. But there are obstacles ahead. First, they are organizing for a voice in workplace conditions. They took this step after the library system restructured and reassigned their work locations and shifts with zero employee input. They're also organizing to improve conditions and compensation so that employees can stay there long term. Not getting paid very much, so there's a lot of turnover. You know how that works. So we'll get into that, and we'll talk about the organizing process in general. Now, keep in mind, in private sector organizing, that allows you, and goes through the NLRB, allows you to request voluntary recognition at the same time you file for a union election. The Ohio State's Employment Relations Board, better known as CERB, makes workers file for recognition first, then wait 3 weeks before they can begin the process for an election if recognition is denied. So this situation is kind of in limbo, and Melissa is going to address that on the show. We're also going to get into a story that was posted on the journalism site Popular Information, which shows how dark money is being used to create a false controversy over what's being taught in our schools. And we're talking about organizations, anti-union organizations like ALEC, the Heritage Foundation, the American Enterprise Institute, and a lot of the outcry, especially when it comes to critical race theory, it's all being generated by dark money, and they're scaring people for no apparent reason because it's not even being taught in schools. It's crazy. So we'll touch on that. We'll also touch on the Ohio budget, more money for schools, and the American Rescue Plan. You may not know this, but the American Rescue Plan, which had zero Republican support, will be bringing in $1.4 billion to Ohio schools. So I'm sure Melissa's pretty happy about that. Later in the show, we're going to be checking in with Laura Wagner. Laura is with the Missouri Kansas chapter of LESSET. What's LESSET? LESSET is an acronym for the Laborers Employers Cooperation and Education Trust. LESSET works to identify new and emerging markets. And the whole idea here is to position the union, in this case, LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, presenting sponsor of this show. So it's there to identify those markets and position the signatory contractors to capitalize on the opportunities that are available. It is one of the three funds that make up LIUNA's Tri-Funds, organizations that are established to assist in expanding the union's market share. And that's what it's all about. LESSET is governed by a board of labor and management trustees. We'll get into all the details on this. And Laura pretty much oversees what's going on in Missouri and Kansas. And their website is MoCanLesset, and Lesset is L-E-C-E-T, MoCanLesset.org. So she'll talk about what happens in that region of America, how LIUNA members are supported, and what the future looks like. So labor and management working together for the common good. That's essentially what we're going to talk about with Laura Wagner as our second guest on the show. New research suggests that the extreme heat that's happening in various parts of America right now produces many more workplace injuries that are concentrated among the poorest of workers. And the injuries are more than what the records actually suggest. So some are saying that climate change, which is happening right now, essentially worsens inequality. This is a study out of UCLA, led by a public policy professor, Jay Yusing Park, who compared records from over 11 million California workers' compensation claims to high-frequency local weather data. This is pretty extensive, too. It went from 2001 to 2018, a 17-year period. And Park found that hot weather dramatically increases the risk of workplace injuries, regardless of whether the work occurs outdoors or an indoor setting. The study also shows that on days with highs above 90 degrees Fahrenheit, workers have a 6 to 9% greater risk of injuries as compared to days with high temperatures in the 50s or 60s. Additionally, the research estimate that high temperatures likely already cause 15,000 injuries per year. And this is just in California. Just in California. That state's annual financial cost of heat-related injuries may be between $750 million to $1.25 billion when accounting for healthcare expenditures, lost wages, and productivity. The study does include one sliver of optimism. After 2005, when California became the first state to implement mandatory heat illness prevention measures for outdoor workplaces when temperatures went over 95 degrees, over 95, the number of heat-related workplace injuries actually declined. Surprising, right? As a result, as the researchers note, in addition to pursuing aggressive efforts to reduce emissions to curb future temperature increases, governments should also consider climate adaptation to help protect vulnerable workers along the way. And the vulnerable workers are the poorest workers around. You know that. A jury in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Wisconsin returned a verdict last Friday of over $125 million against Walmart in the case of a woman with Down syndrome who the retailer failed to accommodate and then fired. Yeah, this story is amazing. The action was brought by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The jury awarded $125 million in punitive damages and $150,000 in compensatory damages. Here's the problem. The damage cap is $300,000 for employers with over 500 employees. So what the jury awarded means virtually nothing. $300,000, that's it. Marlo Spaeth, here's the story, had worked at Walmart since 1999. Then all of a sudden in 2014, the company adopted a computerized scheduling system and changed her hours. And keep in mind, she's got Down syndrome. So when her routine all of a sudden changed, she consistently worried about missing her bus and dinner and felt sick. She repeatedly asked her manager for her old schedule. Nothing, nothing happened, despite the fact that the store was open 24/7 and employed over 300 people. Guess what? She's disciplined for tardiness and absenteeism, and then fired. Walmart, which is America's largest private employer, refused to hire her. So it goes to court. The jury found that Walmart refused to reasonably accommodate Marlo Spaeth, fired her because of her disability, and refused to rehire her because of her disability, which, by the way, is all in violation of the American Disabilities Act. Last year, Walmart paid $20 million to settle an EEOC lawsuit that said a physical abilities test disproportionately excluded female applicants from jobs like grocery order fillers. So they have a history, and it's not a very pretty history. One more here. A Wisconsin community is reeling after a private equity firm acquired a local manufacturing company. Boy, this happens a lot in America. And it's a sad story, I hate to say. Open Gate Capital acquired Huffcor, a 120-year-old family-owned company in Janesville. This happened 4 years ago. And they announced this spring that it would close the plant where 166 workers made accordion-style room dividers, moving operations to Mexico. Many of the workers had been there for decades. Again, the company's been there for 120 years. Open Gate really didn't have a stake in the community, said the locals' president, Tom Casey, who has worked at the plant for 31 years and whose mother worked there for 38 years. The workers, and this is a union shop, they're with the IUECWA, they called on lawmakers to take action. They protested, took out a full-page ad in the LA Times, which is Open Gate's home paper. Professor Rosemary Blatt, who's an expert on private equity's impact on workers, noted that Open Gate's tactics were straight out of the private equity playbook that has harmed communities all around the country. Sad story there. All right, we have to break. Melissa Cropper on behalf of the Ohio Federation of Teachers coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook. That's AWF Union Podcast. And follow us on Twitter handle. And that would be at AWF Union Podcast. Before we get to a Melissa Cropper, got some good news out of the Twin Cities of Minnesota. Education Minnesota, the state's joint national education association, which is affiliated also with the American Federation of Teachers, announced just the other day that workers at the Great River School, this is in St. Paul, went union on June 4th. Those at Hiawatha Academies in Minneapolis followed them about a week later. Both in NLRB-run elections combined, the union will represent 311 workers at the charter schools. Comment here from Denise Sprecht, who heads the union in Minneapolis-St. Paul. She said, "All educators deserve a voice to advocate for their students' learning conditions and their own working conditions." She went on to say, "When school staff have a say in how their schools are run, climates improve and students are more successful." How about that? I'm sure our guest on line number one would agree with that 100%. Let's go to line number one right now and join Melissa Cropper on behalf of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, oh.aft.org is our website, and one of the many proud sponsors of the show. Melissa, welcome back. Always good to start off with some good news, right?
Yes. Glad to hear that news. Of course, we are affiliated. We're both in the AFT state affiliates, so glad to hear that they're organizing charters just like we have in Ohio, and completely agree with Denise Speck there that all workers deserve a voice in the workplace, and that's why we go out and organize our charter schools.
And that's a good segue to talk about what's happening at the Worthington Libraries, and we covered this a couple of weeks ago on the show. But I'd like to get your point of view, because they want to join the Ohio Federation of Teachers, and this is not an easy process. Why don't you just reference what's... I thought I'd get a chuckle on that one, but why don't you tell us what's going on, Melissa?
Right, you know, it always seems like these things should be easy, but they never are. So the workers at Worthington Library came to us a little over a year ago and wanted to organize. So, again, we've been working with them for a little over a year, and they filed their cards about a month ago now, and with 70% people in favor of joining the union, we asked for union recognition from the administration at the library, and they refused to recognize us. They want to force it to go to an election, which is unfortunate considering 70% of the workers said that they would like to have a union. So they said they would be neutral. We have a little bit of disagreement on what neutral actually means. To us, that means that we just go to an election without any kind of interference at all, but they're actually challenging the composition of our bargaining unit. So we're going to have to try to work this out with CERB and get things to a place where we can actually have an election.
And I understand there's a lot of turnover there, and for the life of me, I can't figure this out, because you look at companies in the private sector like Amazon and Walmart, they don't pay very well. So what happens after a certain amount of time? The workers say, you know what, if I'm not going to advance, if I'm not going to make more money for myself and my family, I'm moving on to a job that's going to be paying better. Same kind of thing is happening at Worthington, right?
Correct, right. And in this situation, it all started because the library restructured, and they were moving people around to different branches without any input from the employees at all. So, you know, it's forcing people to work further away from home and separating from the colleagues that they worked with. And just, you know, as usual, the workers would just like to have a say in what impacts their daily lives. So that was the beginning of it, but then it was also, like you said, the pay and the lack of benefits. That was a big thing, too, that we've got a lot of people there who have families, need to have the sick time, need to have time to, you know, child care, parental leave, and those kind of things, which just aren't there. And like you pointed out, why is it's not worth staying in a position if it doesn't provide for your family? So you either leave or you unionize and try to make things better. And they chose to organize and form a union.
And employers should know, when you have turnover like that, it just drives up the cost of running the library, because you have to bring in new people, you got to train them, you got to spend more time on that. That's the part I really don't get. Talk to me about the organizing process itself, though, because these librarians and library workers, I mean, this didn't happen overnight. I understand they spent, what was it, about a year just talking to their coworkers so they can get some support. And then the process is a little bit different when you're public sector workers. Can you explain that part, Melissa?
Right. Well, like you said, they spent I mean, this is just an incredible, incredible group of people. And they've spent a year, you know, mapping out where all their colleagues are within the library system, having one-on-one conversations. You know, a lot of people were on board right from the beginning, but there were others who weren't familiar with the union and needed to have someone have conversation with them. So spent that time having these one-on-one conversations with people and getting everyone to a comfort level of wanting to have a union. And again, we won't file for an election unless we know at least 70% of the people there want to have a union. And we got to that point, and then you know, we have to file with CERB, our State Employee Relations Board. And once we file with CERB, again, the employer has at least 21 days to decide whether they're going to voluntarily recognize the union or not. And they have up until that 21st day to make that decision. So, again, once we announced, we were having conversations with the administration, trying to get them to a point of acceptance. And, again, they agreed to not bring in union busters and to not try to have conversations with employees to convince them not to join the union and all those other dirty tactics that we saw in like an Amazon campaign or something. But, like I said, they're challenging that some people should not be part of it. So now we have to have these further conversations before CERB to define what the bargaining unit is going to be and get all that worked out before we can actually have an election. So, again, it's a very complicated process, and it's unfortunate because, again, you've got 70% of people there who say, we want to pay union dues.
Yeah,
so you've got people standing in the way of that happening, which, by the way, is why we need something like the PRO Act to pass at the federal level to take away some of these complications. All the PRO Act is private sector, but we need something similar for public sector, too, to just take away all these barriers that stand in the way of workers having a say in what they want to do with their own money.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the PRO Act because there's a week of action happening. It's actually started over the weekend, and this is on behalf of the AFL-CIO. In fact, they've got a conference happening tomorrow night with Liz Shuler. All the top people of the AFL-CIO are going to be involved in that, and they're trying to get those three Democratic senators to sign on to it. But getting back to Worthington, I'm reading that you are hoping and praying, I would imagine, that the election will be held in September. Is that where you are right now?
That's our goal. That's our goal, to have this election happen in September so we can start working on getting a contract for the workers there. So, you know, we feel confident. I mean, we are very confident that once we actually get to have the election, that the people there have already spoken and they're going to vote yes and they're going to form a union, and then we can just get to the work of getting that contract and starting to get the things that they, you know, those rights that they wanted and that the reason that they wanted to join a union. So, yeah, we're very excited about it, and we're hopeful that once they form their union that they're going to be speaking to their colleagues and other libraries, too, and telling them how great it is to have a union and how great it is to be organized with the Ohio Federation of Teachers.
There you go. What about community support? As you know, in any organizing campaign, you try to engage as many people as possible. How is that looking in the Worthington area, Melissa?
Yeah, we had an incredible, incredible amount of community support. We put out a petition as soon as we announced that we had filed for an election, and hundreds and hundreds of people signed the petition, and hundreds of letters came in saying how much people enjoy their public library, how good their interactions have been with the employees there, and how they stood behind the employees and wanting to form a union. I think it made a huge impact. I actually had conversations with the board president one time who commented how many letters had come in, and came in almost immediately, almost as soon, you know, within the first hour of us filing for the election. People were just showing that support. Many of the public officials there jumped in support. You know, Representatives Russo, Liston, Leland, Boggs, I mean, all of them joined in and just asked for the library board to voluntarily recognize this union. So it's an incredible outpouring of support from community members who have enjoyed going to their public library and have seen the value of the employees who work there.
Very good. Let's move on to the dark money that's being pumped in to Shame public education. I mean, that's the best way I can describe it. And I understand there's some new research out from the site Popular Information on how, like, for instance, critical race theory. I can use that as an example, how that's being fed into the dialogue, especially on the conservative networks, to create a lot of division, especially between public schools, private schools, and things of that nature. So what's going on here, Melissa?
Well, you know, it's a new attack of the day on public education. It seems like every time we turn around, there's another battle that we're having to fight. But again, it's the extreme right wing using, once again, fear-mongering and hate to sow division amongst people. And they're throwing around this term, critical race theory, which they don't even understand what it means, although I think the people behind this do. They're just using it in the wrong way to try to create distrust in our public school system. And we know who's behind it. It's the same old players. It's ALEC. It's the Heritage Foundation, which in Ohio, you know, that means like the Freedom Foundation, the same people who are contacting our union members and telling them to drop the union, are also out there bashing teachers and acting like we're standing up in front of classrooms telling kids to hate themselves because of the color of their skin and all this other outrageous stuff. And any parent who's involved in their classroom, who's engaged in what's happening in a child's education, knows that this is not happening in our classroom. So it's just another issue that teachers have to deal with that takes away from what they need to be doing in the classroom every day.
Melissa, I can't tell you how many people I had to unfriend on Facebook because of what you just said. I mean, I had a friend, I've known this guy for probably close to 50 years, and he said, I'm tired of teachers teaching hate in schools. And I said, Dave, how far down the rabbit hole have you gone, you know?
Right.
My gosh.
Right.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. It's really crazy.
It's just really frustrating that people are listening to what someone on a news channel or on Facebook is telling them instead of actually talking to students who are in the classroom or talking to the teachers who live in their community and finding out what's actually going on. And it's just ludicrous, the types of things that are being accused. And people just need to stop for 5 seconds and think about this and understand that this is just not happening. It's just not happening. And we need to stop letting people from the outside try to convince us of what's happening in our own communities when we live there and we know what's happening in our communities.
Well said. Well said. A couple more things here before we go. Money for schools. And I see they wrapped up the budget at the end of June like they had to. And I understand there's more money, public money, going into education. And the other part of this component is the American Rescue Plan. Mm-hmm. And I was reading that $1.4 billion will be coming into the state of Ohio. Have you been able to look at all this? And how do you feel about the allotment so far, Melissa?
Right. Well, I'll start with the American Rescue Plan first. I mean, again, thank goodness we have a federal administration who cares about lifting up communities, lifting up education, lifting up working class people, and is willing to invest in that. And because of this American Rescue Act, this ARP money, we are going to be able to do things that will make our schools safe to open this fall. So schools have money to revamp their HVAC systems, to buy the cleaning supplies that they need, to create smaller classrooms by hiring more teachers, to do all those things that we need to make sure that we have normalcy again this fall. So, again, thank goodness to the Biden administration for understanding the importance of that. People like Senator Ryan, Captor, Beatty, the others that we have in the state who are willing to invest in our state in this way and other states across the country, because this is really critical to getting our schools back to normal. The state budget, you know, it's always a mixed blessing. Yes, there is an investment in schools this year, but wow, did it take a lot of advocacy and mobilization and everything else to turn back the Senate, to keep them from doing all the harmful things that they wanted to do, and to actually put a funding formula in place. what we need to understand is that funding formula, they've only made a two-year commitment to that. And if people have read the papers and seen comments that Senator Dolan and Senator Huffman made, it's very clear that they are not committed to this formula. They're not committed to fully funding it. And in the process, they increased money going to vouchers. So it's going to take continued advocacy over the next 2 years up into the next budget cycle to really drive home the message that this funding formula needs to be fully funded, and that we need to keep the formula in place, and that we need to make sure that we're prioritizing public education. Because if we let up at all, this formula will be gone in 2 years, and we'll see more money going into private education.
We don't want that to happen. That's why we talk to you each and every month right here on America's Workforce, Melissa. All right, I want to drive people to the website. It's oh.aft.org. You can follow them on Facebook, OFT Union, and on Twitter, it's OFT Advocate. Melissa, you take care, stay safe, and we'll be talking in August, and kids will be going back to school, and I'm sure we'll have plenty more to discuss then, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break right now. Laura Wagner is with Mocan Lesset, and she's going to explain what that's all about next on America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro. Trial lawyers.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
To Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating. That would be greatly appreciated. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the North Coast Area Labor Federation, connected with the AFL-CIO, which is doing a bang-up job this week, getting the word out on why we need the PRO Act, passing the PRO Act and building the next union generation. There's a number of events happening. Just go to the national website, aflcio.org, and we still have those 3 senators, 2 from Arizona, 1 in Virginia, that have yet to sign off. So call them. Here's the toll-free number, 866-832-1560, 866-832-1560. 1560. Protect the right to organize. All right, let's go to line number 2. And joining us from Kansas City, Missouri, is Laura Wagner. And Laura is speaking on behalf of Mocan Lesset. What's Mocan Lesset? Missouri, Kansas, Lesset. Lesset is the Laborers, Employers, Cooperation, and Education Trust. And they're affiliated with the Laborers International Union of North America, which is the presenting sponsor of this show. Laura Wagner, welcome to the broadcast and the podcast. We've got 2 things going at the same time. Thanks for joining us today.
It's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right, let's talk about how you got involved in this, and I want to get into the particulars. What does a LESED director actually do? But your background, talk to me about that.
Sure. So I have a marketing and public relations background, which is a little unusual for this position. Frequently, it is a political position where there's a lot of legislative work, and that's part of it. But the goal is to even the playing field for our signatory contractors. So sometimes that will be legislative, and we will talk to politicians about responsible bidder ordinances and project labor agreements, but sometimes it's about recruitment and making sure that we have the right people in the field.
So are you the director for Missouri and Kansas then? Do you oversee that territory?
I have the western half of Missouri. I have a counterpart in St. Louis who oversees that area there, Scott Hughes.
And how many like Mo cans are there? Is there one in Florida and Georgia?
LESED directors all over the place. So every region has a LESED director and has a LESED team. It takes a lot of work to try to make things fair for our signatory contractors and keep our members working.
All right. Well, why don't you explain the process? I mean, we're talking labor on one side, management on the other. You know, when it comes to collective bargaining, things can get pretty tense, but you're trying to make sure that everybody's working together. Explain that part to me, Laura.
Sure, I would be happy to. So I am luckily not part of the collective bargaining discussions, but my board is made up of both management and labor. It is easier that way because the goal is that we work together at the end of the day and we have the same goals. We want to make sure that everybody's working. We want to make sure that our contractors have work to bid. So the more bid opportunities we can get to them, the better. And we have a database that we offer them for free. As long as they're signatory, they can see bid opportunities across the board in every region.
And the success rate so far, how has that been? I would imagine you collect data on that, right?
Yeah, we try to. Our market share in this area is not as good as St. Louis. St. Louis has been doing this a lot longer. But we try to be very competitive here, and we have easily 25% of the market for our union signatories here.
Okay. That's in the Missouri-Kansas area, right?
Well, and Kansas is a right-to-work state, so it's a bit of a struggle there. So western Missouri, we do better.
Okay. Do you check other parts of the country? Are you at liberty to discuss what other parts of the country, how they're doing? Or you? I know you just concentrate on that, too, but I'm sure that there's...
Well, every region is different. And so depending on where labor is strong, there's going to be areas that are much better when it comes to the market share, areas where right-to-work states obviously are a bit of a struggle, and the Midwest can be difficult because there's some states here that are less union-friendly. So we're working hard in every region that we're in, but it's a struggle depending on where we're at.
Now, when it comes to the companies that you deal with, maybe you can explain that process as far as the contractors. Is that pretty much a hard sell in some circumstances? Are you part of those negotiations that go on, saying, "Hey, you know what? We've got a good workforce here. We want you to meet with them, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done." And unions are all about safety and training and all that kind of stuff. There's a good sell there. How does that work out?
Well, absolutely. I mean, labor is the number one concern for every contractor in the nation, whether they're union or not. Those discussions are probably the easiest. We do support our organizers, our MROC organizers. So we do what we can to provide them with information. One of the selling points we have, obviously, is the bid database. We have support for our contractors. Because of my background, I have a strong understanding of what it takes for minority and women-owned businesses to get certification in our areas. So there are things that we can do to support smaller businesses and then the larger companies as well. But, everyone is looking for good help. And so that is the easiest part of the conversation to have.
Yeah, I'm just wondering now, because you're hearing so much that employers are saying, we can't find people. And a lot of that, I think, is in the hospitality industry, frontline workers, because of the pandemic. They're saying, I don't want to go through this again. And we're still in the midst of that pandemic. How is that change things for Lesset? Is it kind of premature right now?
I will tell you, we run a campaign every spring for our apprenticeship program to try to draw more people in and make them aware that there are opportunities in construction and opportunities specifically with the laborers. When everything shut down in 2020, we were in the middle of our campaign, and so we watched the regular numbers spike, and we had over 200 people one week contact us to try to find out if there was work, because we remained essential while a lot of other businesses shut down. So there's an interest there, and I know that we brought some people in during that time.
Good, good, good. You see that continuing right now? What are you hearing so far?
It depends. So Kansas is they're continuing the unemployment benefits into September, and Missouri stopped the unemployment benefits in June. So we're seeing a difference between the two states. As long as people still have some income coming in, they're not in a rush to get back to work.
Wow. I'm surprised about that in Kansas. I know we record the show in the state of Ohio, and they cut off the benefits here at the end of June. I think half of America pretty much cut off those benefits. So, and it's still kind of early to tell the true effects of that right now. But that's interesting.
Well, we're not seeing as much of it in the construction side. I'm sorry. We're not seeing as much of it in the construction side as they are in the hospitality side, that people are not in a rush to get back to waiting tables.
Yeah. I don't think so. No. And considering, too, I mean, you have circumstances where the employer is grabbing the tips from the waiters and the waitresses. I mean, you hear horror stories like that, and it's just something that's going to take a long time to figure out. Interesting stuff. You know, Laura, I got to take a quick break here. I have a couple more questions. Can you stay with us for another segment here on America's Workforce?
Certainly.
Very good. Laura Wagner is her name, and she's with MOCAN Lesset. Lesset is the Laborers Employers Cooperation and Education Trust. Whole idea here is to bring Laborers International Union of North America, LIUNA, and its signatory contractors all together to address issues of importance to both. Yeah, getting together. Talk it out. We'll continue the conversation right after this.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Another website I want to drive you to is freedomtojointogether.com. As I mentioned, this is a week of action for the PRO Act. That's the Protect the Right to Organize. Build Back Better with Unions. Call your U.S. senators today. 866-832-1560, 866-832-1560. About a month or so ago, I came across a really interesting website, freedomtojointogether.com. Do check that out. It gives American workers the power in numbers to rewrite the rigged rules of the economy and benefit our families, our neighbors, and communities. Again, I'm talking about the PRO Act. 65% of Americans approve of unions. That has been reported many times. Gallup did this over the years, and they found right now, there's more support for unions than 50 years ago. Yeah. 65%, but only 1 in 10 workers have the freedom to join a union. Why? Union-busting corporations have purchased politicians. They've rigged the courts and finance an entire industry dedicated to denying working Americans their freedom to join together in unions. So support workers. Shine a light on union-busting. We're talking a billion-dollar business in America today. FreedomToJoinTogether.com is a website. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Laura Wagner. Laura's executive director of MOCAN Lesset. MOCAN is Missouri and Kansas. Website is MOCANLesset.org. Lesset stands for Laborers, Employers, Cooperation, and Education Trust. Laura, we're talking about the labor shortage in America. I'm just wondering, and we touched on this. I want to get into maybe some more specifics on how this is affecting the organization that that you're watching over. Where are we with this labor shortage? And there's I'm hearing that 95% of Americans are ready to quit their jobs. I mean, you hear all kind of polling on that. And the pandemic, I've said this many times on the show, has changed everything. And we touched on the restaurant and hospitality industry. But there's a lot of people that are kind of rethinking what they want to do in life. I'm just wondering where Lesset is on this, and I'm sure you've been monitoring the situation. Go ahead.
Yeah, we work with our training directors to try to get the right people in all the time, and we've seen over the last few years quite a few older folks joining the apprenticeship program. So you're seeing people who are 35 and 40 who are tired of the jobs that they have, who want to do something different, work with their hands, and they want to become apprentices. So it's a changing world. I mean, once you're 35 and 40, you start to appreciate having a pension and having benefits. And the 18-year-olds that we've been talking to in the high schools before they consider college or if they're thinking about doing something other than college, they aren't ready yet. So we're trying to change our approach when we're reaching out and when we're doing marketing programs to bring people in. We're looking at 25-year-olds to mm-hmm. start out because it's just the kids aren't ready. They aren't ready to get up at the crack of dawn and come out to work 5-6 days a week. They're just not ready to do that. So we're reaching out to people who appreciate what we have to offer a little bit more.
I'm kind of laughing back here because I'm hearing the same story. We record this show out of Ironworkers Local 17 in Cleveland, Ohio. And that's tough work, being an ironworker, tough work. But, you know, yeah. you got to be on the job at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning. And right now there's a lot of work out there. There's a ton of work out there. They're working 10-hour, 12-hour shifts right now in various locations. When it comes to funding Lesset, and Lesset's been around a long time, and again, this is exclusive to LIUNA. To your knowledge, do other unions do this kind of thing, the Labor Management Trust?
I will tell you, we have some friends at Ironworkers Local 10 here, and when they heard about the position that I took, because they knew me before, because I had done some work with a local labor newspaper, and when they saw that I had taken this position, they said, hey, we need to have something like this here. And so the poor guy that mentioned it ended up getting volunteered into the position. So he's still a business agent at Local 10, plus doing business development work. So I see him at meetings all over town, and I feel bad for the guy.
That's funny. When it comes to funding these, now it's my understanding what there's several funds that go into Lesset. What how does it divvied up there?
Well, less it is part of the training funds, the way that it's determined here locally. I don't know what other lessets do, so I can't speak to that. But the way that it was negotiated here in my region, I'm part of the training funds and the health and safety and health and welfare. So that's the way that it's determined here. So it's beneficial because I think it benefits our contractors a great deal, and I don't know if they are aware of all the work that goes into it. My board is made up of three management, three labor representatives, and two alternatives from both management and labor. So I have an eight-person board. I don't know how it is for other lesser departments, but that's mine. And it works pretty well. I mean, I think our management is very... They're more aware now about the opportunities and what less it could be than what they, I think other people who don't have that insight, other contractors who don't know what goes on behind the scenes, they're missing out. So I try to reach out to them and tell them, but they're all busy trying to run their business. So eventually I'll make it there.
I'm just wondering, there's good stories and there's not so good stories. You know how that is with working relationships. I'm just wondering, when you have a signatory contractor that has a fantastic experience working with the union brothers and sisters, do they go out and say, hey, you ought to join this? I mean, this has worked for us. In other words, do they try to sell the program? Have you seen that happen?
Well, I think every business owner is just head down concentrated on their own company. But we are, and it's specific to Lesset, we're doing video testimonials and we're putting banners out on our job sites that say this contractor pays a living wage, especially when it's in a high profile job or a high visibility location. And that is making a difference. The addition of social media, where we can put those videos out and show those photos, has helped tremendously.
That's great. So where do you see the future? I mean, you've been how many years have you been doing this right now, Laura?
I've only been doing this for three. So I have plans for the coming years, and I hope to expand this a little bit more. But the labor shortage is not going away. So the more that we can do to try to do outreach and help support our businesses, they're going to have an advantage over the ones that are scrambling to try to get good people.
I'm just wondering, do you see some changes as far as, I mean, you basically cover, you said Missouri and Kansas, but there's parts of Missouri that you don't. You said St. Louis is, I'm just wondering, do you see them expanding those areas or maybe just the opposite, concentrating on them maybe state by state? What is there any kind of a game plan for long-range planning on all of this?
Well, I mean, we're always whittling away at the right to work issues in Kansas, and that's going to happen at the state level. So that's where we're taking that fight. But as long as we can support our contractors and try to make sure that they're getting as much work as possible, I think we're going to have success. So we're going to start with the people that are with us now and grow them as much as we can. And that success can't be ignored.
Very good. And one more question here before you go. I mean, you got a powerful union behind you. I'm talking about LIUNA, Labor's International Union of North America, LIUNA.org. Terry O'Sullivan is a dear friend, loves the show. Support from national, that's got to be monumental and make you feel pretty good, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I am grateful for all of the tools that they have available. It is a blessing to have that whole network with me so that when we have new contractors come into town, I can reach out and try to get an understanding of who they are and how they work with us or don't work with us. And it is great. I've not had this kind of support anywhere I've worked before.
Very good. Like to hear that. All right, Laura, great job. Thank you for joining us. I learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners learned a lot. Again, we're talking about Mokan Lesset, M-O-K-A-N, Lesset, L-E-C-E-T dot O-R-G, Labor's Employers Cooperation and Education Trust. Lesset bringing Labor's International Union of North America, LIUNA, and its signatory contractors together to address the issues that are important to both. And there's a lot of issues that are important to both. Great job. You take care, stay safe, and keep in touch, okay?
Thank you, Flash. Will do.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the American Federation of Government Employees and the Cement Masons. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.